Hello, everyone. You are listening to the ITV/STV Six Nations podcast with Flats and Shanks.
We are back for the whole of the 2020 Guinness Six Nations. Plenty to get my teeth into round one.
My teeth are false.
Like a burnt fence.
Bag of chips.
Like knickknacks. How was Paris, David? Did you speak to some of the guys after the game? Who did you meet up with? Who was there?
Well, I was like Schwarzenegger. I was like Dutch and Commando. In and out mission.
Were you?
Yeah, get in, get the job done, get back across the
border.
Please
don't wake my friend. He's dead tired.
Yeah, it was like that. It was great. I mean, I was in and out in a day. I don't want to go on about being a great guy, but obviously you have the choice with ITV. You can go over the day before. You could probably wangle a Friday flight if you wanted to for a Sunday game.
And make the weekend of it.
And flip enlarge it. But my little girl had a netball tournament.
Oh.
So I'd rather go and see that, to be honest. It was great. It was really good. Went to see Gareth Chilcott. He was out there with Venator. So I went to see Ali, works with Cooch.
I've never heard Gareth Chilcott speak, but so many people I know have. And the reports that come back is just he is brilliant, phenomenal.
As soon as he says hello, you are on the verge of giggling. Not laughing at him, laughing with him, because he's got funny bones.
Yeah, like Steve Spears.
Yeah, exactly right. And probably being a big bloke helps, but just got funny, funny bones and just naturally very, 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 very amusing guy. So I went to see them, just had a drink with them before the game, and it was myself, Miles Harrison and Ben Kay. What you do is you take your chances in France, because food in France can either be the best food you've ever eaten or horrific, as you know, and it can just be gum bleeders and cardboard cheese. But we went into the media room at the stadium. Now, it's a risk that, because you could eat at a little cafe on the way in. Took our chances, pork cutlet, amazing.
Really?
Cheese board, amazing. Crepes. I'll tell you who tucked in. Paul O'Connell overate a little bit. Ben Kay overdid the cheese. He's got a problem. I overdid it, obviously, because I'm grossly overweight. Tell you, he went right over the top
addicted.
For someone recently retired, right over the top in terms of calories. Dylan Hartley, worried about him.
Really?
Yeah. He's in good shape now, but it goes, doesn't it? You know
Very
that.
Quickly. Three times faster than he put it on.
You know that. But it was a good day. The weather was terrible, but we're undercover, so who cares?
Do you know, France is weird. It's like the only place, well, you can get them anywhere, but where you can actually buy like a baguette with steak and chips in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I was in Cardiff for the game. No corporate. Took the family. First time I've taken the kids.
How was it?
Well, you're normally working, aren't you? So it's difficult to take kids. But there wasn't much work going. Slash turned it down just to be a great guy. They loved it. Had a hot dog, nachos. It was a great atmosphere as well. You had all the fire, all the pyrotechnics. The stadium was nearly full. A few spaces and a few seats, empty seats there, which you'd imagine sometimes with Italy. But really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed the match day experience and a nice little pizza after.
Just a load of empty calories and wee-wee trips, isn't it?
But then, you know, when you go to the game, though, it's quite annoying sometimes because you've got to get up and down all the time because people are going for drinks. People then need the toilet as well. You know, they're on like 20-minute toilet breaks because they've broken a seal. And also, you've got to watch the game again then when you get back because... Yeah. We were behind the post and you've got to see the replays. You've got to see some of the close-up angles, but really enjoyed it. So I'm just a great guy.
Well done. You actually took your children somewhere. Mm. Good man. Right. Coming up, we'll be speaking to Thomas Castagnède and Rory Lawson, hearing from Vanier Puvec and Johnny May, picking our team of the round and also telling a few of the jokes you've left for us on iTunes. There are some right good ones too. I'll tell you that.
God, that was some game in Paris, Flats. Le Crunch. You were in the Stade de France for ITV. The atmosphere looked amazing, looked electric, which is what you'd expect. Mm. And the French delivered to their fans in style. A really, really good performance. We'll talk to our old mate, Thomas Castagnède, in a moment. But first, let's hear from Johnny May, who spoke to Monsieur Flatman after the final whistle.
John, it didn't quite happen out there today, especially in the first half. What do you think went wrong?
First and foremost, France were fantastic. They came out, really took it to us. It's one thing knowing it's coming, and we did. It's the second thing stopping it, and that's what we failed to do. It's a game of momentum rugby. You can feel it, the crowd building, those guys getting more infused by what we're doing, and the game does affect you when things aren't going your way. It's hard to get out of it, but we got a point out of the game. We played some good rugby second half. I think that point's going to be critical.
And in the first half, there were so many errors that we're not used to seeing from this England team. Have you got any idea why they happen, or is it just one of those sporting things?
Nobody's ever going to know why these things happen, are they? But like I said, all I can put it down to is rugby is a game of momentum, isn't it? When you've got the momentum, things tend to go your way. When you haven't, these are the sorts of things that can happen. And credit to France, they won the momentum in the first half.
When France have got the momentum, and they certainly had it sort of going into half-time, is there a chat amongst you guys to say, right, we're going to change this and change this, or is it keep plugging, lads, we know our plan works and it'll come good in the end, and you kind of fingers crossed job?
That's probably what's disappointing, is that the plan to the first half was the same as the plan to the second half, but we just couldn't execute. Like I said, for whatever reason, I'll put it down to the fact that we didn't have the momentum because France were better than us in the first half.
And they did, in all reality, look pretty spectacular in that first half. They seemed greatly improved. Were you impressed with the French team?
Yeah, hugely impressed. Once they're on the front foot and the crowd get behind them and off they go, they're one of the best teams in the world. That's why they're so hard to play against. But we'll be disappointed with some of the stuff that we did in the first half.
Thanks, Johnny. Good luck next week.
Thank you very much. Thank you, mate.
Yeah, Johnny was talking about momentum a lot there. And it's one of those things that he kind of kept saying it, but he's absolutely right. And it's quite easy, well, it's very easy to sit watching on TV or in the stands and say, England need to do something about this, or England need to stop making mistakes. It can be really hard to switch momentum in a game when the other team doesn't make mistakes and doesn't let off. I thought France had let off, actually, in the sort of the final quarter. I thought, this is it. England are going to somehow win this. But I think Johnny was exactly right. France just had it going them. Let's just quickly see if Petit Thomas agrees with that assessment from Johnny.
Thomas, are you good?
I hear you badly, sexy Welshman.
Thomas, David Flatman aussi.
Oh my God, and you're with your little flatty. Ça va, mon ami?
Yeah, très bien. How are you?
I'm feeling well, you know, so happy. You know, beating England, you know, it's such a nice feeling. When I said before the game to John Inverder that we were going to win by 10 points, he said to me, are you joking?
Yeah.
And I think no one believed that we could do that, especially after the World Cup made by England. But everything was new in this French camp. And as we said, Sean Edwards, you know, brought, I think, something special and different, something that was missing in the French team. And I think that's a brand new decade with new players, new mentality that is coming. So it was good to beat England, but I think we need to confirm. And it's not about one game. You need to win every game, and that will be hard.
And Tommy, be honest with us, okay? Did you think with 20 minutes to go that France were going to find a way to lose that game?
Well, we were scared because we thought about this Welsh game. That was 1 or 2 years ago when we were leading and we let the game go. But I was scared after five minutes in the second half when England nearly scored. And I think we don't know how to handle that kind of pressure, because when you're leading like this, when you do such a very good first half, you know, then you don't know what game you should play. But in the end, we managed, I think, to score some strange tries, you know, and I think we really need to improve in our attack. But the desire was there, and I think the intensity was much stronger for the French team. So I think we really deserve to win that game.
You mentioned Sean Edwards at the start there. You're not part of the French setup, but you know, you're there, you're in the media. Have you spoken to anyone? How the players dealing with Sean Edwards? Have they ever seen anything like it before?
Well, I you know, Thibaut Giroud was at Saracens, and now he's the fitness coach for the French team. This guy brought a lot too in terms of fitness, because the French fitness would have collapsed in the last 20 minutes, so he brought a lot. And Sean Edwards was brought by Rafael Ibanez, who knew him from Wasps. And I spoke with Raf, and he knew that from experience that this guy can bring something different. And I was surprised that Sean Edwards, after his experience with Wales, wouldn't take the lead in a club, because I think he's a man's club. He's someone who needs every week, you know, to be motivated, and he's so committed, so involved. So having him with the French team, I think giving some advices to the French team and probably, you know, to some clubs and to some young teams, you know, will be a massive step up for French rugby, because we thought of having a foreign coach, but that wasn't, I think, the good thing, because speaking to French players was really difficult if you don't speak the language. But having him, you know, as like a backup, I think is really fantastic, even if I don't understand his English.
No, but no one understands his English, neither do we. I'm not sure he does. The French rugby's in a lovely position after game one. Of course, you and we hope they back it up. But there's more to come, because you've got so many players that weren't playing, guys like Damien Penaud, like Thomas Ramos, like Jalibert, like Carbonell. So presumably there's there's actually still a lot of potential in this French team.
Yeah, there's a massive depth, but you only speak about the backs. And I've definitely, we got some talented backs, but the major concern about that English game was in the forwards. Mm. We didn't know how the forwards will cope with the pressure. Awas was brand new tight head, and you know, Flatty, how hard it is, you know, to be in that position when you don't have so much experience. And he did really well. And Leroux, I made 22 tackles.
He was incredible yesterday.
Yeah,
incredible.
He was immense. You know, he had some offensive tackle all the time, and the back rows were, the back row players were really incredible. Very one, you know, was like running all the time. The other one was making the yards and cross, you know, dealing with the lineouts. I think it's a good combination between the players, and I think now they can believe that they can write a story, and that's good, because the last 10 years was really a bad moment for French rugby.
You've beaten England in Paris. Next week, this week coming, you've got Italy in Paris, which is another good game for you, I think. You know, off the back of that intense game, you've got Italy, which are perceived to be weaker team. You're going into this competition now, and I think you're going to be 2 from 2 coming down to Wales. Can France go all the way?
Winning the Grand Slam, it's, thinking about winning, the first of all, the Six Nations, it's, we always think it's a bit easier for us when we receive England and Ireland. But the thing is, playing Wales, I've been very impressed by Wales in this first game, even if it was against Italy. They are very clinical. I think Tompkins brings something special. It was like Shankling when he arrived, you know, for this Welsh team. Like,
can I just say you said Shankling?
Crazy
there,
man,
not
running
Hankling.
Like a rabbit, you know. And yeah, so I think they were missing. They had some Adams, you know, on the wings. They had some guys who were George North, you know, brought lots of experience, powerful. But they had a lack of speed and a lack of something different. And I think this new generation brings something special. And with the experience they have in the forwards and the quality they have all the time, you think that. Because in the Champions Cup, the clubs, the Welsh province are not doing really well. You always think that you can close the gap with them, but the national team is so unbelievable, and they've got so much confidence in themselves.
Well, Tommy, merci beaucoup. You clearly think that France are going to win the Grand Chelem. We think you might be right.
For once.
For once. Thank you for joining us. Mon petit cochon.
Mon plaisir, les amis.
When you're back over into the UK, I'll take you out into China White, okay?
Okay, I love China White.
Au revoir, Tommy, et merci.
À bientôt, les amis, bye.
10 points is quite a big prediction against England, who...
Well, he was wrong, wasn't he?
Who are coming into... He was only wrong because of the last-minute penalty, mind, which England probably could have gone for the scrum, but it made no difference because they still would have lost and they got a bonus point anyway, which, you know, could come in handy towards the end. But I don't know if you remember, I thought France were going to do it because of the team they've got and the players they've got and the youth they've got. You expect, and at some stage, this French team are going to come good because they're playing well. Loads of the under-20s have come through from the World Cup. They're playing well in Europe, and at some stage it's going to click internationally, and it did to a large extent. The weekend, I mean, it wasn't a perfect performance by them. You know, they were certainly muscled out in the scrum. You need a little bit of luck. They did get a little bit of luck, especially with the box kick, wasn't it, that rebounded off, I think it was just touched.
Cross. No, Olivon, and it was judged not to have made any contact with him, and it very, very clearly did. When it made absolutely...
Top of the shoulder, was it?
Well, he sort of knocked it back onto himself, but the TMO's decision was, I believe, from what I heard in my headphones, was made no contact with the French player. We were sitting with Ben Kay, like,
initially,
it very clearly did.
Initially, I thought it did touch his shoulder or his chest, but is that class as a knock-on off your chest?
Is it?
Please let us know.
We were sitting up there and we were talking about well, England got to do this for the bonus point, and after the game we're like, just double checking, there are bonus points to the Six Nations.
Like, yeah,
it's weird how you absolutely know this stuff, you read all your prep, you do all that stuff, and sometimes your brain just freezes when you're, I mean, you can laugh about it luckily.
So give us your thoughts on the game, Flats.
I thought England would win because France are more likely to cock it up than England.
Yeah,
historically that was the main reason. I never doubted French potential, but that their propensity to deliver it is patchy at best. But they delivered it. I thought they were great, and I don't think that Eddie Jones's comments pre-match, they certainly didn't help, but I don't think they probably do the damage that a lot of punters think they do, because rugby players as a rule don't care about what coaches say because they know it's all bluff.
Yeah, but as a coach, you know, you're looking to find weakness in opposition, and I remember he did it a few years ago with Rhys Patchell. Rhys Patchell had a cracking game against Scotland in the opening game of the Six Nations. I think it was 2 years ago. And then he came to Twickenham and, you know, it got to him. The occasion got to him, and Eddie Jones had sniped at him all week. So it does work. But
it can work. But
I suppose this is an instance where it's come back to bite him a little bit.
Danny Morris was saying that he or he overheard someone ask Bernard Leroux, the second row, after the game, did you read what Eddie Jones wrote, said during the week? And he said, yeah, every word of it. So you just never know. And the French are like the Italians, and it's not a myth. They really are an emotional bunch, which is why the French often fold, because they can't quite cope with the occasion. It's very little to do with ability. But on the day, a couple of things. The two second rows, Valencia and Leroux, and I sort of think that potentially the most underwhelming part of this French team is their front five. I thought the second rows were immense. Mm. Bernard Leroux, if he played for South Africa, I mean, they've got some pretty decent locks there. If he played 10 tests in a row for South Africa in a season, he would be close to being nominated for World Player of the Year. Peter Steph Du Toit does a similar job, and I think he's better ball in hand than Leroux, but the damage Leroux did off the ball was just unreal. I mean, I couldn't take my eyes off him at some points because he was just an absolute terminator. Without him, they don't win that game. Also, pre-match, I'm always interested in the front rows, and Big Mo, they call him, Mohamed Hawass, the tight head from Montpellier. It's an interesting one because I watched the French games, and as soon as they pick someone called Big Mo and big French tight head and he's from the wrong side of the tracks, it's a great story and pretty rough upbringing and all that stuff. It's a great story. And I say this respectfully, doesn't mean he's any good. I think he is good and I think he has got potential, but he was being written about as the answer. And I'm thinking, this guy is not in the top handful of scrummaging tight heads in France. He's just not. And people who are writing it, I'm thinking, you're just copying what everyone else says. You haven't watched the games. And we can't watch every game. We all miss games. But I thought, that's an odd one. I mean, the best scrummager is Slimani, and he's not there since Nicolas Mas retired. And then I thought Demba Bamba coming off the bench. Now, this guy is big things. Like, this guy is an unbelievable rugby player. But there are people saying this guy's the next big thing in French scrummaging, and he's the next world force. And I'm reading it and listening to it, thinking, what? You are adopting someone else's narrative, and you're adopting the narrative of someone who hasn't watched the games. This guy's scrum is way off. I mean, it is way off. There are times when he sticks in there and does okay, but he's got so much to learn. Mind you, Sinclair wasn't a world-class scrummager when he began. Genge had scrummaging work to do. You know, Marler wasn't necessarily immediately a force. I mean, it took him 5 minutes. But, you know, this is a young guy who may well become a really good scrummager, but I'm thinking as soon as he comes on, I'm thinking this guy is toast. Genge will go for him. And he did, and he butchered him. But them changing their front row, I think, nearly cost them. It was potentially a really big mistake. And I think the one thing that can undermine France, as long as concentration doesn't, is not their front five, their front row, because I don't think it's...
Yeah, but
the tight heads aren't special.
They struggled in the scrum, they struggled in the front row, but they still won the game. England had the possession, they had the territory, but couldn't really do anything with it. Do you put that down to just the French defence? Do you put it down to not having a big ball carrier like Billy Vanapola? Tuilagi was lost during the first half. I mean, at times, England didn't really know what to do. You had Farrell dropping the ball twice on consecutive occasions. It looked very un-England.
Yeah, and in terms of mistakes, the obvious ones are the Farrell ones. I mean, when Farrell makes mistakes like that, it's like Hogg dropping the ball. It's not as bad as that, but it's not bad. It's not as cringe as that, really. But it's, what do you do about that? Well, there's every chance he'll be really good in the second half, and he was. So
yeah.
I think you just, sometimes people make mistakes. He just doesn't make very many, so it didn't look right.
Well, no one makes those types of mistakes that level.
No. But I mean, he's an incredibly reliable player. But,
yeah, no, I agree.
But I think England were underpowered in the carry, and there was a lot of talk. I asked Eddie Jones after the game whether he thought, having watched the ball skid out the back of a couple of scrums, it was a mistake not to pick a specialist number 8. Predictably, he said no, but I do believe it was
an
error.
How were England underpowered? Because when I looked at the scrum weight, England were heavier than France.
Oh yeah, but mate, a good, you know, would you want to scrummage against Julian White? No. Would you worry about tackling him in the outside channel? No. There's a big difference between static strength and power, really, you know, at close quarters, and athletic, repeated athletic power in the carry. I think it's a big difference. And I think just in terms, technically, at the base of the scrum, I thought that was a real issue. Curry, I think, as I've picked him in my team of the decade after won Six Nations, I think he's an absolute, he's a fantastic back row. I think I'd probably have him in my back row of the World Cup. He was that good in Japan, but he's not number 8 yet. No. I think it was an error. And also, Manu goes off and you think, yes, there's some powerful blokes. Underhill carried well, but without Billy there, Mako not playing, I do think it was right to start Joe Marler. I thought he was really, really good, Marler, as ever. But I thought that, as we said last week, I think you're struggling to smash people in the carry. France aren't struggling with that. And you've got Dombrandt, mainly. You've got Simmons, Tim Ida-Harrison, Tom Wood, Nathan Hughes, all watching on telly. I'm like, come on. And do you think it was a mistake not to pick an eight? No. Do you think you're underpowered once Manu went off? No. What do you expect him to say? I think it was, and I think they were.
He's so like you though, mate. You like you and Logan Roy, you know, they can't actually apologise. They can't actually say, I was wrong.
I'm reading a book called The Psychopath Test, and there's 20 questions or whatever it was, and you, 18 of them, worried about you. That's all I'm saying.
Furbank missed an opportunity, early doors, down the right-hand side, drops it. But sometimes I think you look at games and you just know it's not going to be a day. And that was with Boutier, with that spiral kick from his own 5 metre line.
Oh, my days.
And it bounces 10 metres out from England's line. And you look at those types of kicks, you think, maybe it's not going to be our day.
I said on the comms, we were doing comms for highlights.
Phenomenal.
And I said, that is the best kick below high altitude at sea level, whatever it is, that you may ever see or that you'll see this season. It was unbelievable. But and in cruddy weather as well.
You talked about the French second rows and how good they were defence. So was Gael Ficou as well. Chouan Evans has picked him as defence captain. He just annihilating people in the tackle. His technique was low. It was powerful. He's a massive bloke as well. You know, him and Vakatawa in the centre. I mean, when you look up and you see those, you think, right, there's no easy way to tackle him. There's no easy way to defend them. They're big, they're strong. I thought both of them were great as well, and it looked like Vakatawa was going to go off early doors, but luckily he stayed on. But Dupont, I just thought, was incredible. And the way he just creates space, he created space for Teddy Thomas, and eventually Entomat puts an inside ball to Ratez to score.
He was great.
Like he should have started from, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. You know, to be called that late for Damien Penaud and to have the game and the influence he did was incredible. The size of him as well.
10'3".
He is not wearing shorts to a nightclub, is he?
He was in the media room afterwards, and he weirdly just, there's the all the interview room, and he came in there and just sat on the floor and took his boots and socks off and just sat in there on his own, which was a strange thing. It was interesting to get a look at him up close, because you say these guys are tiny, and he's tiny. he's quite tall, actually, but he was great. I really enjoyed watching him because he fights so hard. I guess you have to when you're that small, but the back row and the scrum half were just otherworldly.
Yeah,
brilliant.
But also I thought Entomac, you know, his kicking at goal was superb. I thought his temperament was really good. I thought England's kicking, especially to the air, especially the box kicks, the up and unders, wasn't great. They were either too far, too short. Didn't really give any of the chasing wingers or centres a target. They were lucky that Johnny May, and I know France were lucky as well with the Olivier try, the first one, but they were lucky that Johnny May was on his game down the right-hand side for those two tries. You know, that was pure world-class finishing.
I don't tend to go in for the whole scoreline flatters or who deserved it more, because it's like, well, score the points or don't, you know. This is one occasion where a couple of people have said Johnny May scores a couple of brilliant, brilliant tries to flatter England. And I actually agree with that, because I think England, yes, they came back into it in the second half, but they were decimated for large parts of that game and they were way off. And France were absolutely—they were so dominant, absolutely on it.
But you can see how well drilled they were in defence. There was a clear change of. I thought there was more aggressive tackles. I thought their body heights were a lot lower. They were chopping.
They just looked so relaxed in formation.
And also, like you said, Flats, you know, you think, you know, the last 15-10 minutes they will tire. Yeah. England will come back, and there was none of that. You know, the attitude was there. So it looks like the Sean Edwards effect is working.
Yeah. It appears that he is not a myth, Sean Edwards. It appears he is really quite something. Should have been England coach, shouldn't he?
Did you like the little piece in the Times Adam Jones wrote about Sean Edwards?
And you?
Yeah.
Remind me?
When he first came to Wales and we weren't sure what to make of him. we knew he was married to Heather Small and they'd split up. So I put the best of them people on the bus to team run.
But all the way, he said, all the way. And one song would finish and the next them people song would start and then the same song would start again. It's quite brave, that, because he's known for his commitment, let's say that. Right, Ireland, Scotland, Shanko. We're going to speak to former Scotland scrum half Rory Lawson shortly. Mr. A, as I call him. He's got a little sort of drinking game he plays. Nothing too laddish, but a good little drinking game. Just takes a pack of cards around with him. I think it's like a pack of FBI's Most Wanted or something.
Like Dynamo, is he?
Yeah, he's got this weird little game he plays, and I've never quite worked it out. But he'd say, "Who do you think's coming up?" And I'd say something like, "Yeah, I can't remember the names, like Steve Smith, the Ghanaian despot, or something like that." And he'd be like, "Turn it over, it's Mr. A. Perhaps finish that, and then pop to the bar." That'd be it. You never quite worked it out, but it was very, very... Anyway, it's fair to say his kinsmen were a tad unlucky in Dublin on Saturday afternoon. Lots of people blaming Hoggy for that fumble over the line, but it's not his fault, Tommy, is it? Wasn't his fault.
No.
Was it? It's because you hexed him on the last pod, didn't you, boy? You hexed him.
It was the pitch. The pitch was greasy.
Let's remind everyone of what you said when you were bigging up his credentials as captain, Tommy.
He'll actually be a great captain because what you really want from a captain, I always think, is when they speak, people listen. And everyone will listen to him because...
And you need them to deliver on the field. The man.
They
have to deliver on the field because you can't be talking about one thing in the change room before you go out and then the first thing you do on the field is drop a ball.
Well, I feel a little bit bad now. You know, I was trying to make a joke of it, but you know, he does actually drop the ball over the line.
Tumble of Wimbledon. It's your fault.
Cursed him, didn't I?
Yeah, it's your fault. You first a Hogmeister. These things happen. These things happen, Tommy. What's the most unfortunate schoolboy error you ever made?
Dropped a kickoff. That's probably the most simple ball to take. You know, it's a drop kick. It's not an up and under, so you don't lose it really high in the sky. You know, the wind doesn't have an effect on it. It's just coming straight down at you. Sometimes it's too easy.
That's really bad, though, but you were an international band.
What about you?
You should have done that. Oh, mate, so many. I barely caught the ball. It was terrible. But real bad one. I once... We were playing on tour with Clive. We were playing against Canada.
Are you just making this up now?
No, and I got thrown the ball. And I got thrown the ball by our scrum half, whoever that was. I think it was Kieran Bracken, actually. And it came straight to me, straight in the basket. And I dropped it. I didn't even touch it. Like, I didn't even touch the ball. It's really odd. That isn't the worst. The worst is when I tried to, playing against France at some point, tried to throw a ball, basketball pass over the top in our 22. And Damien Try just plucked it out of the air and scored under the posts. That was good stuff.
What was the first one then, if it wasn't the worst thing? Did you just think of the second one then? Quickly?
Yeah, I thought it was.
I thought of a better one as well.
Did you?
Yeah. Playing against Toulouse in France and decided to grubber the ball through and it's on. There's no fullback there. As a grubber, it lands into one of the centres, Toulouse's hands, and he runs all the way and scores under the post.
Good day for him, though, isn't it? And you do want to celebrate the fortune of others. Right, Tommy, let's bring in our old mate, Rory Lawson. Hello, sir.
Hello, boy.
Big Rory Lawson.
How are we?
I'm all right. Slightly disappointing performance by Scotland. Although there were some positives there. What were your thoughts on the game?
Loads of positives. I don't think anybody really gave Scotland much of a chance going out to Dublin on Saturday. But actually, we end up leaving Dublin disappointed not to have won it. You know, when you look at the lack of clinicism, 11 entries into the Irish 22 for a return of 6 points on those occasions was just so disappointing. But out the back of it, I think we've got to take a lot of positivity.
I don't agree with Shanks. I thought Scotland were really good. Thought they were great to watch as well. But one thing that Hogmeister General said leading into the game as skipper was that Scotland mustn't beat themselves. And they got themselves into so many good positions. We'll talk about the obvious one in a minute. But they got themselves into so many good positions so many times. Do you think it was almost a case that they didn't quite have the confidence to go and score? Because it seems like they kind of self-sabotaged so repeatedly that it had to be kind of a confidence issue. Did you think that?
It was a really funny one. It was one whereby, and I've had a load of chat with people on Twitter and the likes afterwards, and you know the comment that struck a chord most with me was actually I think Graham Simmons said that. Had Scotland been Exeter Chiefs inside the 22, they would have won the game and probably picked up an away bonus point. And, you know, Scotland in that era, that's a massive area of improvement because I think they were a little bit flustered. They tried playing a little bit too high tempo, lacked a bit of control inside the 22. And ultimately, Scotland don't necessarily have the giant power ball carriers that are going to drive over from 2 metres out. But therefore, you've got to then bring more latchers into the game. And I felt that they were a little bit individual in that area. Scotland had to be hard to beat. They were hard to beat. And had they taken chances, you know, that was a game there for the winning, which will frustrate the players, it will frustrate the coaches. It was a shift forward, I would say, in performance from where Scotland were at the Rugby World Cup. And now they've got to build on that. They've got to set that as minimum standard and take opportunities. It's very rare that Scotland don't score a try in any game now.
The obvious mishap was Stuart Hogg's drop over the line. Horrible moment for him. Firstly, his first game as skipper, and it's just all round a horror moment. And in context of the game, potentially in the context of Six Nations, do you agree with Shanks that he should be dropped and not selected again for the Six Nations? Oh, sorry, did we not record that bit?
I would never drop Stuart Hogg to start with. he would make every single team for Scotland. Flats is just trying to stitch.
Do you think?
Up.
I mean, the real question, Rory, is obviously a horror moment. But do you think it in a, and I mean this, it almost it couldn't have happened to a better person because he's just by far and away an obvious selection for Scotland, such a high-performing player that actually he and they will get over that pretty quick.
Yeah, definitely. I went to the post-match press conference and Hoggy fronted up straight away. And he's a world-class player who, by his own admission, made a schoolboy error. And he literally just came out and said, you know, it was schoolboy. You know, it's one of the first things that you're taught as a youngster is when you're over the try line, make sure and get that ball down safely. And he was disappointed. Gregor Townsend backed him. We all know the ability that Stuart Hogg has. I think he's taken to the captaincy role incredibly well. Mm. He'll do it in his own way and he'll get better and better. People spoke after the game about, oh, you know, did he show some leadership naivety with the management of Mathieu Reynal? If you look at Johnny Sexton, couldn't get much out of Mathieu Reynal. He wasn't happy. No. He wasn't content and willing to have a proper discussion with either captain. So I don't necessarily suggest that's a captaincy naivety, but I think at the same time he will get better and better in that role. And he wants Scotland to be pushing for titles, and he sets his standards incredibly high. He is a world-class operator. He will react the way that Stuart Hogg will react from this. And I think you're right, actually. If it was to happen to one player in the team, you'd probably want it to be Hoggy,
yeah.
Because he's the guy that is nailed on starter. He is your captain, and he will react in the right way because he's the sort of bloke who sets his standards right up there and has everyone else push themselves to get to where he is.
This weekend it's the Calcutta Cup in Scotland. If Finn Russell is allowed back into camp and in contention, do you think he'll start, or do you think they'll go along the lines of keeping with Adam Hastings, who I thought showed really well, and also maybe Rory Hutchinson coming in at possibly 13?
Yeah, I'd be really surprised if Gregor Townsend changed all that much to the starting 15. I think Adam Hastings was composed in the fly half position. I thought he played well. He looked comfortable. He's a confident young man, you know. And I thought he bought into the way that Gregor wanted to play very well. He varied the game nicely. I think he is. It would give the very wrong message and impression to people if Finn Russell came straight back into that side. I think Finn has some smoothing over to do. Whether he gets into the 23, whether he's training with the squad this week, I'm not sure. I guess we'll all find out in due course. But I think I was surprised. The one change that I was surprised at was 20, 25 minutes to go, Chris Harris came on for Hugh Jones. I thought that was the time to get Rory Hutchinson on. And I know that Rory Hutchinson was covering 10, 12 as well. But that was the moment that I thought, get him on now. Get him in those outside channels where he can expose even good defenders. But as it was, he got limited opportunity. I don't know how much Gregor will change things going into Saturday's game. But, you know, they've set the standard. They now need to ramp it up and take that same quality back to Murrayfield.
Well, what I will say is that I'm going to be Scottish for a week, leading up to the game next on the weekend. Now, I know you are clothes shopping for yourself. In Mothercare, we can hear the noise behind. We'll leave you get back to it. Hope you pick up some nice bargains, mate. And maybe see you at the weekend, all right?
Are you up, Shanks? Are you?
Yes, I'm up.
I'm up as well. So we'll see you up there for a mineral water. And see you up there.
See you, mate.
Cheers, lads.
Now, you weren't disappointed with the Scots.
No, right? I thought they were really good.
Okay, so you're not disappointed that they wasted three try-scoring opportunities?
Yes.
So you are disappointed with them?
I'm disappointed with aspects of their game. But yeah. I'm disappointed with aspects of France's game, who won, and Ireland's game, who won, and Wales' game, who won.
Yeah.
You know, little aspects. I thought Scotland really fronted up and should have won it.
Well, I thought they were good, but the disappointing thing for me was that they didn't win it.
But the thoughts were they might get blasted over there, and the fact that they didn't, I think, is good news.
I'm not sure they were going to get blasted. I think they're still a good team. But if you look at some of their opportunities they had, you know, there's an intercept by Sam Johnson at the end of first half, right? And if he looks to his outside first, Sean Maitland is busting a gut to get there. And by the time it comes to him, it's too late. And there's a crossfield kick, which is on, but also the pass is on as well. And Hastings tries to go for the kick. So I just feel that was an opportunity. There's a start of the second half. There's a 3v1. Hugh Jones is going down the left-hand side. He's got Nick Hanen and Kinghorn, and he he decides to tuck the ball when that was a pretty clear opportunity. And then you've got the Stuart Hogg dropping the ball, which we're not allowed to mention because...
It's your fault.
We love Hoggy way too much.
It's your fault.
You know, three opportunities there. You don't get many in a game. You have to take them. And you just think the top quality international teams, you know, they're scoring three from three with those opportunities.
Or two from three.
Maybe
or
two from
maybe
three.
Maybe one from three.
But that's a 15-21 point swing, you know.
Of course
points
it's
so it's huge. It's huge.
Adam Hastings was good.
Yeah, I thought he was really good. I thought he mixed the game up really well. You see a lot of Finn Russell in him. Similar type of player. You know, there was nice that Finn Russell FaceTimed him the night before and sent him a text before the game as well.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was really good.
I didn't know that. That's good.
But then you've also got, you know, like Sam Johnson just barging players. You know, but I can't remember which Irish player he barged when they're chasing a kick, but just moves in front of him, dips the shoulder, penalty, and Ireland just get a shot at goal. So, I mean, it'd be interesting to see what Gregor Townsend does. I really think that they need to bring in, who's the centre from
Hutchinson,
Roy Hutchinson.
I agree. I like Hugh Jones, though.
Yeah, I do as well, but...
Looking good, Nick.
That opportunity down the left, start the first half, he needs to give that. They're in. Scotland are in if he gives that. You know, they don't score a try, but there was only one try in the game and it was created beautifully, I thought.
Thought the pack looked good, really enjoyed the back row. Hamish Watson, of course, but I thought Richie was good. Enjoyed Haining as well. The front row I liked. I just thought they looked really good. I thought they're good. And I think England are going to be bang up against it this weekend. Predictions are the work of fools. You must never give predictions. Who do you think is going to win next week?
I think England will.
You always say that.
Well, no, I don't.
You're
you always
biased.
Say it.
You're
I just
so
think
biased.
In terms of who's going to be hurting more after the weekend and who's going to have that emotional involvement in it, I'd say more so England. I mean, we didn't see too much from Ireland. We saw a lot of one-up carries off nine, very close to the Scottish line. And then what I really liked was the Sexton try, how they created that and how they flooded the channels with players, with decoy runners. It goes to Kieran Healy, he turns his back, hits Murray, and then you've got Lama coming short. You've got Sexton going wide. And it's down to, I think, Ali Price has to make a decision. He has to jam in, and then that separates himself and Maitland, and the hole just opens up. From the wide angle, from behind, it is just a brilliant example of how to create space, you know, and how to isolate defenders. They do that, and they do it really well. But we didn't see too much from Ireland, I didn't think. Didn't show us too much of the hand. Good start for Andy Farrell as head Ireland coach. But no, I mean, we saw more from Scotland, I think.
I wanted to see more from Ireland, really. I think that the try, bit of Kieran Healy work was really nice. But I agree. But I think that's pretty much the only variation we saw from whacking into people when in the red zone. I kind of wanted to see more. I don't quite know what I wanted to see, but I wanted to see a little bit more invention, a bit of...
But you want to see Lama with a ball in space. You want to see him, you know, beating players one-on-one. You want to see, you know, we didn't see much of Jacob Stockdale either. We didn't see much of really any of the players.
No, individually.
Not individually.
Van der Fleer we saw a lot of. Wow, what a game he had.
CJ Stander, turnover time at the breakdown.
Yeah, he was really good, wasn't he? But I don't know, I kind of wanted to see a little bit more invention from Ireland, but it's game one post-disappointing World
Cup,
so it's not a big deal, and they've won at home. But I thought they just looked very, very like the team that was playing in the World Cup, and I suppose, how wouldn't they? It's the same people.
Hmm. Well, anyway, thanks to Roy for his time. Scotland face England at Murrayfield next Saturday, 4:45. Keep up to date with all the build-up via itv.com/6nations. That's itv.com/6nations.
So, a predictable outcome in Cardiff on Saturday, Tommy, with your mob thrashing an Italian side that played okay in parts. They very occasionally looked fluid, to be fair. That's about it. 42-0. A good old-fashioned kneeling boy. Reasonably impressive stuff, even if your best player was English. You were there, Tommy, and we'll get your thoughts on what you saw after we've heard from our soon-to-be new best friend and roommate, Vanya Pivec.
It was a pretty good performance from the point of view that we got the 5 points that we're after. It wasn't easy. We had to work hard for that, as you could see, but certainly pleased to have done that. Very pleased to have held them scoreless, so that doesn't happen very often at this level of the game, and pretty pleased with Byron Hayward coming in, that we achieved that. And, you know, the boys working very, very hard, even after the 80th minute and looking to score points. So, you know, it's sort of something that the boys want to do. They want to play a bit more. And I think at times we achieved that. And at times we may have overplayed. So still plenty to work on. I think in the first half we were caught out quite a lot in terms of our reaction to ball going out, a couple of quick throw-ins. which meant we had a jagged defensive line and they got too much yardage on us. So just little things like that, making sure that we're awake and we don't expose ourselves like that again. The scrum was probably a bit messy at times, and you know, there were times when I think we had numbers defensively, but we were holding rather than pressing. And so there's plenty to work on, as I say, which is a pleasing thing at the stage of the competition.
Vanya, pretty pleased with that, boy. Felt they could improve on line speed and the scrum, but got to be happy 42-0, haven't you, at this Levs?
A couple of late tries, yeah. But it was just, you could see a difference in the Welsh team. I thought they were less predictable. I thought they mixed up running the ball back out of defence a lot more. So many times we just used to see Lee Halfpenny catch the ball and just boot it in the air. But, you know, I think he's been given a bit more of a licence to run, and we saw that. He really tried to attack
with
counter-attack, with his pace and his footwork. But also just the variation of just a couple of chipping the balls over the top as well into the space. He does it once. Johnny McNichol does it again. I just thought it was a really good balance between kicking long, running, chips and up and unders. And it just keeps defences thinking. I think McNichol really adds to the balance of the back three as well, because he is lively. He is very good laterally as well. You can see him, he sort of steps to the side with a big fend just looking for space, and it didn't actually open up for him as much as we thought. But it's going to be really interesting to see what type of team Vanya Pivak picks next week and who loses out on selection, because, you know, Josh Adams will play.
It's easy. Tompkins 13, George North back on the wing, Johnny McNichol to the bench, Halfpenny at fullback.
I think that's possibly what they do, but I love watching Johnny McNichol play.
I do, but you can't not pick Nick Tompkins after that.
Yeah.
He was so good. So.
I mean, Josh Adams is...
Did you see Gav Henson's tweet?
Yeah. I'm not retweeting that.
Nick Tompkins screaming in an England shirt.
Josh Adams' first try was off set piece. Always nice for your attack coach to score tries off set piece. But the moneymaker is the ball Tompkins throws to Halfpenny. You know, it's right out in front. He fires it as well. So the ball's not in the air for a long time. And then it's just simple. 2v1. Halfpenny puts Josh Adams down. But that's not just a finish. You know, that's not just a run-in. You know, it's about timing your dive. It's about knowing what dive to take, whether you go low, whether you try and keep your legs in the air. And he's just got a knack of being able to squeeze in the corner there. It's a proper skill to be able to do that. He is world-class.
Yeah, I think he's right up there with the very best. Mm. To say he's a nailed-on starter is stating the obvious, but he really is. Mm. He's very, very,
there's so many good performances. Dan Bigger was, again, great.
Between the legs, what?
Yeah, and that is his... His whole body position just makes, I think it's Sato, just confuses him really, because he's facing inwards. You never think that ball's going to be able to be passed, but he does. Sato switches off, and the skill's beautiful. I think we saw it for Northampton this season.
It's Chris Boyd, mate. He's a different player under Chris Boyd. I know he's not under Chris Boyd when he's with Wales, but Chris Boyd has freed him up so much, I think, that I think Chris Boyd's influence was in evidence at the weekend in Cardiff. I thought he looked Bigger looked really good.
He's purring right now. But there were some really good performances. Tipperick won man of the match. Great to see Toby Faletau back. Tomos Williams is their more skillful player, just off the cuff. You know, he's elusive. Do you see the one-handed catch he took above the head? He's phenomenal, mate. He's really come on these last couple of years. It's good to see Reese Webb come back on as well. We've not seen him in a Welsh shirt.
Colour on him.
A long time.
Colour on him.
Yeah.
Hilarious. He looked really good, though, I thought.
But with Nick Tompkins, you know, if you weren't sure when the squad was announced and when the 23 was announced, you've got to be now, because his passing game was just on point. Turnover, he put North away, scored his own try. Massively impressed by a player that's essentially following my footsteps.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll be a secret hero to him.
Wants to be you.
You know, but I just thought you have to start him. He was that good. Yep. You know, when he came off the bench for HIA to Johnny McNichol, I thought, man, keep this guy on. He's had a turnover. He's thrown a wonder
pass. He's thrown another one later on as well.
Yep.
He's thrown two brilliant passes. And it's not until you see a pass like that that you realise lots of international players' passing is not as good as that.
No, but they have to be fast as well, don't they? Have to be zip.
Yeah.
You know, because it allows, you know, if the ball's in the air for a long time and it's floated, it just allows defenders to turn, to recover, to get themselves in the right position. But when it's fired like that, there's no chance.
Yeah, I remember reading, hearing, whatever, some people calling for Lee Halfpenny to play at 13 and you think, playing the midfield, and you think to yourself, this is a wonderful player and very, very effective in the back three. But in terms of his passing off both hands, it's incomparable. He has skills that Nick Tompkins, for example, doesn't have, and plenty of them. But in terms of his passing, you saw how important it was to have passing of that quality. And his passing, from what I've seen in his, you know, the last few years of watching Lee Halfpenny, he's a very good passer with the ball, but he's not on that level. So I think calls for him to play midfield were sort of misplaced, actually. I'm sure he could cover it, but it's not going to have the same effect.
I think Owen Watkins is going to be back fit, or be in contention for Ireland away.
Won't pick him, though.
Liam Williams should be back either this week or the following 2 weeks for France. So there will be a couple of selection dilemmas, but you have to start Nick Tompkins, I think. He was that good. Italy were quite poor, lost the ball quite a few times in contact. I don't think you can get too carried away with Wales' performance. It was a positive game. Great to start the Six Nations with a win. Defensively, they have to tighten up. There's quite a few missed tackles. I think Wales had 25 missed tackles. I'm not quite sure on that stat because I've checked a couple of websites and it varies from 20 to 25. But look, they're in a good place, lean up to Ireland away, which is going to be just massive, massive game. Can't wait for that. But all in all, positive. And the intent was there by Wales, I think, to play a wider game, to play a more expansive game. We didn't see Hadley Parks trucking up in that 10 channel, that 12 channel too often. Yeah, you've got to use him a couple of times because it's part of breaking down teams. You know, you're not always looking to break teams first phase. You're looking three or four phases down the line sometimes to cut teams, and you need that platform of the gain line, of getting over the gain line and front football. But it seems like Wayne Pivak and Stephen Jones are trying to create their own style of play, and it's not going to come straight away, Flats, but
oh Tommy, of course it's not.
We're certainly going in the right direction.
Yeah, enjoyed that. We've done it, Shanks. We've reviewed all the games from this weekend's Six Nations. If you want a bite-sized roundup of all the action we've just discussed, check out The Breakdown on the ITV Hub now, and you can watch Ireland play Wales live on ITV next Saturday at 2:15.
Now, before we get to our team of the round, Flats, some feedback from our Six Nations team of the decade, which we picked in episode one. Have a listen if you haven't already to find out who you went for.
Good team, that.
But it's fair to say that one selection in particular provoked a good deal of criticism. Not like you, is
it? You don't rate Sammy Randrajka, so not like, is that what it was?
Not like you to get on people's nerves. Can't help yourself, can you?
No.
We've got Chris B. from Twitter. Curry, ? After one Six Nations campaign, plenty of promise, but in terms of the team of the decade, Warburton, Tipperick, Navidi, Omani, Stander, Watson, Underhill, Robshaw, Dissatoire, my dad.
So you think your dad's better than Tonga? Okay, yeah. Curry and Itoji, says Sion Roberts.
Sean.
In the future, possibly, but the last decade, insane. Are you saying Maro Itoji's inclusion in a team of the decade is insane? I'm sorry.
What about Paul O'Connell?
That is a ridiculous comment. What Paul about O'Connell, I will very gladly have in my team.
Not over Itoji?
No, the last day I picked the team I wanted. To say Itoji is an insane decision is insane.
This is the thing, mate. You've got to stop getting so aggressive when people argue with you. Mark Oak, Tom Curry, gents, right, gents. It's gent. Yeah. I did not pick the team. Parise, Warburton, Omani.
I'm sorry, if I'm picking a team to win now, I'm not picking Parise over Curry. Curry just does more effective stuff in a game than Parise.
What about Sam Warburton, double Lions captain?
Yeah, there's an argument there, isn't there?
Massive one. When the decade started, Tom Curry was 11, and you've picked him.
Yeah, he's brilliant, though.
Mate, you had Sugar Rush. That's what you've
had. No, he's brilliant. At six. He's brilliant at six.
Bob Hamilton, great admirer of Faletau, but for me, the number eight shirt has to go to Sergio Parise.
Sorry, Bob. Completely disagree.
We could go on. Should we stop right there? Or do you want to do more?
Someone said, Faletau over Billy, please. Yeah, Faletau over Billy, yeah. Hogg, twice named player of the Six Nations, isn't the fullback, Shanks. You are, to be fair, what you've done is, let me guess, see, you've picked someone good and someone Welsh over clearly the best fullback in the Six Nations.
Is he better than Liam Williams?
Okay, here we go.
Is he better than Liam Williams?
Guess what?
Okay.
I'd make one change. Rob Carney at fullback says Damien Byrne.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah,
good
hang
call.
On a minute. Damien Byrne, where are you from? You'd put your guy in, wouldn't you? You'd put your Irish guy in. Come on, Damien. Come on, our kid.
I mean, Johnny Smith here. It's quite a balanced one, really.
He's got a point, Johnny.
He's gone for all the forwards you've picked. Paul O'Connell, played for half the decade. Thierry Dussatoir, Jamie Heaslip, Dan Lydiot and Chris Robshaw. You've had a shocker, mate.
No, hang on. Wow. Jamie Heaslip over Toby Faletau because he's played... Toby Faletau's played almost as much.
You'd probably pick Heaslip somewhere else, though, second row, knowing you.
Heaslip's at 10.
Okay.
He's at fullback ahead of Hogg and Liam Williams. Anyway, enough of your views. We quite like them. I'm sticking with Curry. I like Curry. I think he's a bit of a baller when he's playing at six. On to our team of the round. The players that illuminated the first weekend of the 2020 Guinness Six Nations. Tommy's on the backs. I'll do the pack. Tommy, who you got?
I'm going to go from 9 to 15.
Well, okay, Thomas Williams. And the last one will be Lee Halfpenny, but well, 10 quid.
I've come with DuPont. Had a great game at the weekend. you know, he's going to be in that French team if he's fit for a long, long time. Sniping runs, powerful defensively, powerful runner. Ten. He's got it all. Number 10 now. Dan Biggar came close, but in terms of the intensity, keeping his head cool under pressure, kicking his goals, I've gone Entomac. I've gone for the partnership of 9-10. I just thought he was in a big game, and it was a huge game. I thought Entomac was awesome at the weekend.
Yeah.
My centres at number 12, I have...
Fiku, obviously.
Gael Fiku.
13.
Defensively, wow. I've got Nip Tonkins at 13. Although he was on the bench to start with, I thought he was the best 13 of the round. On the wings, I've gone Josh Adams.
Yep.
And I can't pick Johnny May. Although he scores 200 tries, he gives up for that French try.
Tommy.
I know.
Nearly saved the day. Have you gone Ratez?
I've gone Ratez.
Yeah.
I've gone Ratez. And at 15, I've gone Lee Halfpenny.
Of course you have.
Who have you gone? You're going to pick someone controversial because you can't help yourself. And you just want the attention.
I'm not like you. I don't just try. I'm not like a Labrador. Don't want to be everyone's friend. I just don't mind if people disagree with me.
Oh, what happened to... I'm Frenny Dave. I don't need a network. I just go around and chat to whoever.
You're different. Right. Sutherland at Loosehead. Enjoyed watching him. Thought he had a good game. Defended very nicely. Carried well. Scrum looked decent. Enjoyed that. Fraser Brown at hooker.
Mm.
I know these guys didn't win the match, so people will argue that, but that's fine.
Still play well, mate.
Thought he was really good, and he just bashes people in the tackle. I really like Fraser Brown. Tyke Furlong looks class. Looked really, really good in defence. Just mobile, explosive. I just love watching him play when he's at it. Could have picked both French second rows, but I'm not going to. Going to pick LaRue.
Yes.
For obvious reasons, and I'm going to pick Ian Henderson. Again, you could probably pick either of the Irish locks as well. Devon Tonan was good when he came on too. But I'm going to pick Henderson because all round, I think he's just fab. Stander at 6, obvious reasons. Tipperick at 7, obvious reasons. Olivant at 8, obvious reasons. Could have picked the whole French back row. Could have picked lots of guys in the back row, played brilliantly this weekend, but that's my back row. And I'm sure some of you agree. I'm sure some of you don't. C'est le jeu.
What does that mean?
That's the game. Before we go, some of your jokes. If you're new to the pod, we're asking you to leave us a joke on iTunes when you review us. Some of you have said that our Team of the Decade was a joke. That's not funny. We'll read out the best and worst of them each week, so long as they're clean. Of course. We've had quite a good response, haven't we, Tommy?
Yeah, Big Nose Lovely on one of the reviews, which I think might be... Saracen's backs coach Kevin Sorrell. What do you do if you see a spaceman?
Don't know.
Parking it, man.
Okay.
Spaceman, yeah.
Winnie the Pooh has gone on a holiday to the Caribbean. Antigua? No, I think he went with Piglet. Oh.
Jerome Reed. What do you call a man with no shins? Come on, Dave, you know this.
Tony.
Yes, well done. Well done.
A man walks into a zoo and the only animal is a dog. It's a shit zoo.
Yeah. Bemoa. Got sacked from my restaurant job because I brought nothing new to the table.
Went to a wedding last week. Very emotional. Even the cake was in tears. No. What's origin? Sounds like a parrot.
What?
Carrot.
Okay. Mooley. Sorry, that's the name. You hear about the magic tractor?
No.
Turned into a field.
That's all from us.
Yes, it is. We'll be back after round two to see whether it's Scotland or England who bounce back, Ireland or Wales who kick on, and how many points France can put past Italy.
Ta-ra.